All right, I submit that today may have been kind of a, or this week anyway, might have been a really kind of busy week for a lot of people. A lot going on, a lot to pay attention to. I mean, I realize that. But I figure we should, you know, I do have this email. This is Terry from the internet who says, I love the Spot News fake bit. Super fun. You should do it at every show. Well, then how come you didn't guess which news was fake? Like, I get a lot of, like, you know, a few people saying, hey, that was a great bit. You should do it more often. But nobody played along yet. So this week, you don't get to learn which news story was fake. I'm not going to announce until I get an answer from somebody. Damn it. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-Skeptic, 844-753-7842. We are not live this week, but current, at least. You know, this is actually the Sunday that we're that this will be broadcast on, or at least, well, broadcast to the internet. And joining us today is Josh. How are you?
Doing great.
Fantastic. And joining us after a bit of a hiatus is Jeremy. How are you?
Oh, doing well.
So what brings you back to the friendly confines of the studio?
Oh. I was asked.
You were asked. Yeah. Okay.
That's... And it happened to coincide with me breaking my news fast, which has been on since November.
Oh, okay, you've been on a news fast since November. How has your news fast worked out?
Pretty good. I think I timed it right, actually.
Okay.
Because there was nothing uplifting, as far as I can tell, from mid-November till yesterday.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I mean, I went to Chicago. That was nice. But I don't know if that counts as news. I know I've been staying away from the news this week. Just because I need to work on other stuff. I've been playing a lot of RimWorld, if you're familiar. It's a video game. It's on like some sort of early release on Steam, and I've just been playing a lot of that. I've also been reading up on IPv6, but maybe I'll talk more about that later. Yeah, because, well, you know, I got to be forward-facing in something. Absolutely. But it's Sunday. Sunday is the day I pay attention to news, so I guess we ought to pay attention. White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer delivered a statement describing Trump's inauguration crowd as the largest audience to ever witness an inauguration, period, both in person and around the globe. In response to the many municipal and news agencies pinning the in-person number at around 200,000, presidential adviser Kellyanne Conway reported that Spicer had given the media alternative facts. Conway then asserted that there was no way to quantify crowd numbers since the Park Service does not issue crowd estimates, but insisted that the crowd was definitely the biggest. Trump himself claimed that, from his perspective, it looked like a million and a half people. Crowd scientists used aerial footage and multi-angled photographs, analyzing crowd coverage density during a time frame in which the least movement was recorded.
It's just amazing how they think that they can actually get away with this. This is the same argument that they were saying, that they have a mandate. They keep on making up all this stuff as long as they assert it. They're correct is in their beliefs.
Well, they got their own set of facts, apparently.
Yeah, alternative facts.
Well, okay, let's be honest. Name a presidential administration in the United States history in the last, let's call it 50 years, that hasn't said that it had a mandate on one level or another.
That's actually true. I mean, everybody wants to inflate their numbers, but this is
did Nixon's successor throw out the word mandate?
But Nixon definitely did. And if he's the inheritor, don't chapter and verse me on that, but I'm pretty sure mandate was mentioned a few times. Everybody always mentions a mandate. It's one thing to say, oh, we've got a mandate. It's another thing to say, but it's another thing to insist that you're incredibly popular when, you know, you didn't get the popular vote and
nobody showed up.
And the protest march the next day was something like an order of magnitude bigger than the inauguration party.
Just ignore it, it'll go away. Just ignore it, it'll go away. That was their response to that. It was pretty amazing.
That's not fair, Sam. They didn't have Three Doors Down.
Three Doors Down begged off?
No. The protests didn't have Three Doors Down.
Okay, yeah. I'll be honest with you. The who's going to play the inauguration party was a news night drama situation that I just did not participate in. I didn't. Who ended up playing?
Toby Keith and
Three Doors Down.
Three
apparently.
Doors Down.
Okay. Anybody else? Anybody I'd know?
Not that I know of.
Okay. Well, who cares? I mean, if I were like, hey, you want to do the inauguration? Yeah. I mean, I'll call him a jackass, but yeah. And I'll do it. Yeah, that's fine. A
little third eye blind kind of strategy there.
Yeah.
At the RNC.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty good. But I mean, you know, I've been saying for the last few weeks, let's not lose our minds about President Trump until he's the president. And okay, I grant he's the president now, and he's actually starting to do some odd things, especially regarding the ACA. But I think we expected that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, I don't know. It's
the man's like an onion built of several layers of marrow deep psychosis. He's almost impossible to puzzle out.
How's that?
He reminds me of the worst girlfriend I ever had, who is a like certifiably crazy person.
Okay.
And if you try to argue with that, you end up becoming Harley Quinn to the Joker.
All right.
And Trump is just so pathologic in his ability to pinball around.
Right.
He can change gears in the middle of a sentence and go somewhere else, and it doesn't affect him, and he doesn't seem to see any fault with it. That's why I had to take a fast, because I've been analyzing this for since almost the day that he came in for, you know, to announce his candidacy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just worn out. I thought, well, we all thought he was going to lose, too, because math.
Right.
You talk about some alternative facts. That's what got him into office, with some alternative numbers that nobody knew about. But yeah, I do not think he's neurotypical at all.
I'm not really, I don't want to judge.
I do.
I mean,
totally fine with me judging
okay.
him.
Okay. I mean, I don't want to diagnose, I guess. Mm-hmm. I judge all the time. Don't get me wrong. But I'm not going to diagnose. But I will say he's at least, you can pin down what he's going to do. Maybe not specifically, but in a general universe he's going to want to do. If you keep in mind that no matter what he's doing, he's always setting himself up to be the most important man in the context that he's in. So in American politics, he wants to set himself up as the most important man in the United States. When he was a New York real estate mogul, he wanted to set himself up as the most important real estate guy in, you know, in New York or New England or
this
whatever.
Is where you and I differ on this issue, because I don't think I'd be comfortable pinning him down in that way, but I'm totally fine with going, yeah, he's a borderline personality with narcissism.
Why would you prefer doing something that you are not an expert in versus just noticing trends?
I don't notice a trend. Okay. There seems to be I see no method, sir. No method at all.
Oh, I think there's a method.
Heart of darkness.
He's not. You can't get to where you've gotten by just being crazy every time and just always doing the unexpected. I have yet to see him like wear fish or anything like that.
I think he's a much different man than he even was at the beginning of the Obama administration.
But it's always been seeking after power. I mean, whatever power is available in the room, that's what he's going to rub his face on, basically. And who knows what weird chemicals are. I don't know. Where do you stand on this one, Josh?
He's a showman. He knows how to play the audience, and he's done it very effectively.
Right.
He's gotten a strong audience, and using alternative facts, he's able to get the audience to follow him. And he won by the slimmest of margins. Basically, he lost the popular vote, but won because he was able to activate the right people in the right places of the country.
Yeah, I guess, but you also have to keep in mind that, as we just pointed out, he was behind in the polling the entire time. He was able to float, he was able to capitalize on something that apparently nobody was looking at.
Yeah.
And I think that changes things. It's like the showmanship is part of seeking after power. If you look confident, most of power is about looks. If you look confident and you feel confident, it's easier to have control over people. And that's kind of what this is all about, isn't it?
Right. Absolutely. He mastered it. Yeah. He's a master.
I don't know if he's mastered it, because shall we look at the numbers? But but it's definitely what he's trying to master.
Well, he's a kind of an attention junkie.
Yeah.
Any attention for him is good attention. And I think he got into the presidency almost by tripping over his own feet, but doing an amazing somersault and landing it is kind of how it felt to me.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it that way.
I meant to do that. Sort of.
Yeah, everybody around him was so incompetent that he just managed to win by default. Mm-hmm. I think is what it is. The way I've always said it in the election is during the election cycle is they had 15 freaking primary candidates in the GOP primary, and the fact of the matter, what happens there is a psychological thing I'm a little bit familiar with called choice starvation. Is you have so many, you know, you've got a 9-page menu and you don't know which one to select. So you look, you find some really dumb rubric that even you know is dumb that lets you, you know, it's like, I just need to pick something. Oh, there's a big yelly guy who looks like he'll get stuff done. All right, I'll vote for him, whatever. And then he's the president and he's the representative of a branch of politics he himself doesn't actually believe in, which is why it's easy for people who see him as the Republican candidate and want to vote for Republican to place ideas and concepts and knowledge and positions on him that he doesn't actually hold.
Yeah, this inauguration speech was actually kind of vindictive against the party who he took over
right
to win the presidency.
Yeah.
I do wonder, though, if he won on the backs of a lot of protest votes from people who never thought he would win the election.
I'm sure there was some of that, but
yeah,
I
it's an impossible thing to quantify.
Yeah,
but it makes me feel good, so I'm going to believe it.
Ah, you should have been around for last week's episode. I don't know about that. I don't know how much of it, is that, but it. I think a big part of it, and this is why I keep harping on this, is just that, you know, the side of the apparently sane people, although God, I say that with so many asterisks and footnotes that it's hard to say, just have ignored huge swaths of the population that brought Donald Trump this victory. And this brings it to my point. I don't think he won. I think he just let other people fail.
Mm.
And because he doesn't have the responsibility to actually hold the reins of power at anything other than the top, he didn't get any of the dirt on him. So he looks, so to the right mind, he looks pretty clean.
Teflon Don.
Yeah.
Utterly shameless, yeah.
Well, that's what this Teflon thing already is. I mean, they've said Teflon this, Teflon that, ever since Reagan. And the fact of the matter is, he's just, if you're willing to be shameless and own it, it looks like it just doesn't stick to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not caring. All right, so we've got some clips. And the first clip is the one everybody's been playing, but let's just do it.
Washington,
warning, President.
D.C. and giving it back to you, the people.
We take Gotham from the corrupt, and we give it back to you, the people.
2.5 million hits on YouTube. Josh, would you explain this for us?
Yeah, I mean, it's one line from The Dark Knight Rises that everybody's using to quote, to basically say that Trump basically plagiarized from Batman. The optics are pretty bad, but right. Honestly, as you have pointed out previously, this is something that everybody that's ever ran for office has said.
I was hoping you'd leave that to me, damn it.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, you're right. I mean, okay, it is funny that it matches up so well. But the fact of the matter is, anybody who plays populist politics, which in a democracy is going to be everybody, everybody's going to say something like this. I mean, it was hippies and the civil rights movement, you know, who are saying power to the people. I bet you could find a clip of my guy, Bernie Sanders, saying the exact same thing. I'm reasonably certain you can get both Clinton saying this thing. It's literally, I am here to give you more control over your government. And that's what it is. There's nothing special there. I don't know, Jeremy, am I wrong on this one?
I'm going to say something controversial. I didn't care for that third Batman movie.
Did anybody?
Did not like it. No, people loved it. I don't get it at all.
Okay, because I've not seen it.
I felt as out in the cold on that as I do this presidential election cycle.
Oh, yeah, not politics. Let's talk about this. Yeah. No, I went to Chicago and everybody was like, yeah, I hated that third Batman movie because we were talking about Tom Waits and somehow that leads to Batman. Nobody in my family seemed to like that third movie. And you got up, I remember you notably, ahead of anybody else, and you got up and walked away from that movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I left.
Okay.
Yeah, the implausibility that you're going to hold a city hostage with a nuclear bomb. Spoiler alert. You're going to hold a city hostage for over a year with a decaying nuclear device. That's not really even supposed to be a bomb, but right. It is a bomb.
I left when they spent half the movie establishing that no one could get back into Gotham, and then Bruce Wayne just shows up in Gotham.
Hello!
And people always, and I'll stop talking about this in a minute, they go, well, he's Batman, he could figure it out. And I go, really? Because the screenwriter couldn't figure out how to get him back in there. So you're giving a lot to Batman.
Yeah, so he's going to say stuff like this, and I'm a little worried because this is... He's saying stuff like this, and it sounds like Bane, and we all know Batman, so we're going to talk about this. But there were other parts of his speech that I'm like, you know, given my political proclivities, I'm like, oh, God, that's right out of Lenny Riefenstahl. I mean, that's Triumph of the Will right there.
Well, if you just read through his Twitter, like Mark Hamill did, he reminds me more of the Joker than Bane, actually.
Oh, I love those. Those are the greatest things ever.
All right, so we're talking about Mark Hamill doing Trump tweets in the voice of the Joker, his Joker from the animated series.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty good.
But I've been doing that since I found out that Donald Trump is on Twitter, which was sometime last year.
Okay.
Not a huge Twitter person, but yeah, it's a Ferris wheel of death and psychedelics going on in his head at all times, in my opinion.
But there's other quotes in here, and here's something that I've really only heard from... that I mostly heard only from Jeremy talking about. And so I went to go find this clip to play it so that Jeremy could talk about it. But there's all sorts of really weird things around it. So let's play it.
Mothers and children trapped in poverty in our inner cities. Rusted out factories scattered like tombstones across the landscape of our nation. An education system flush with cash, but which leaves our young and beautiful students deprived of all knowledge. And the crime, and the gangs, and the drugs that have stolen too many lives and robbed our country.
All right, so the first thing we need to talk about is educational system flush with cash.
Flush with cash, but having it never educated anyone, apparently, at all.
Yeah, I mean, my teacher drives around in a Jaguar, so, I mean, I'm on his side on this one. Some bull crap.
I'd be willing to put money that he had never set foot in a public school before he started this election run, and then he probably had to give some talks in public schools, but he'd probably never seen the inside of one before.
Just like his education pick, Davos.
Well, Davros. Okay. I'll leave that one alone. So there's two things here. I mean, here in Washington State, this is the year they got to make the McCleary decision work. This is the year they have to fully fund public education in Washington State for the first time ever. And there have been education budgeting issues in every state I've ever lived in, and that's 3.5, 4. And I've never seen if there's a flush with cash educational system, I've yet to see it. You know, I mean, Bellevue's got a pretty
built
cash
schools,
positive.
Yeah, on the east side of the metro area here in Washington, and they are cash rich.
That's because they're based off of property taxes, which means if you're in a rich neighborhood, you're going to be flush with cash.
And if...
Well, the voters vote how much money they want to spend on schools. It's a really strange system we have up here.
If you're a person like Donald Trump, who's likes to associate himself with economic prosperity and the like, do you think he's ever gone into a school that had less than $1 million in its operating budget?
No.
No, of course not.
And maybe the school he... ran, air quotes,
yeah,
and got sued for.
That's true. Yeah, there's all that. But what I noticed here when I was looking for the clip is that he sets up this, you know, our beautiful children are not being educated, and, you know, there's poor people who don't have jobs, and then slam cut directly into drugs destroying people. Oh, my God. And it seemed like a don't know if this was intentional, but given who likely wrote this speech, I think it might have been. It was like, don't worry, rich people. It's still their fault. It's still the drugs. They did this to themselves. You need not care. It rang like a bell for me when I heard that. Anybody else or am I alone?
I was so thunderstruck by... Well, I was very thunderstruck by the factories as tombstones littering the landscape.
Right.
Because it's the most poetic thing I've ever heard come out of his mouth. And then for him to have a go at the entire educational system right after that was just like, this is crazy. You know, teachers vote.
Right.
Administrators vote. People that are in high school now getting an education will be voting next go around. And it's also kind of a good microcosm of the kind of propaganda you get from any fringe group of a certain philosophy, where it's kind of reinforcing something that your target audience already believes, and then taking them a step closer to make them feel intellectual.
Right.
And we don't need truth, need not be involved at all, because that's demonstrably untrue.
Yeah, and this was another example of him talking, jumping from topic to topic within the same paragraph. Essentially, he just hammered all these conservative points mm-hmm. without actually giving any substance behind the points at all, and did literally just was asserting whatever he felt sounded good for optics.
Yeah, well, I got to admit, it sounded a little bit like that. But did he write this speech? I don't think he wrote this speech.
No. No, he didn't write the speech. He doesn't write his speeches, except for, I mean...
Well, he's written a few.
Yeah, I guess you could tell when he writes a speech, and it's...
Well, what's interesting is the spirit of the day was supposed to be bringing people together. Okay, we need to get together, and nah. So he does it by kicking both parties to the door, which is the populist playbook page one. Look at the entrenched power and just say it sucks. But then he just starts insulting large groups of people who voted for him. But, I mean, like I said, that's something that we've seen before in certain places, like Chile. But I guess we can talk about that later. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. I'm going to go to the break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation a little bit, but we're going to talk about a little bit of what the other side said. I got a clip specifically that kind of annoyed me. And then just, you know, others goings on, but I think we're going to continue with the political thing.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Dorn, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio Versus the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at SeattleAtheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
My name is Jonathan Ariola of TDTF Pod. The more voices you hear, the more we observe and feel, the more we learn about the other facets of this complex and wondrous beast that is humanism and free thought. Join me on the science-loving journey through topics like justice, murder, family, diligence, taste, history, society, race, boob jobs, law, addiction, video games, fear, sacrifice, children. Wait a minute, not sacrificing children. That's not what I meant. Bring the popcorn and watch me break down the issues too deep, too fast. Join me at TDTF Pod. I'm Jonathan Ariola. Talk to you soon.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Now, this is the time where, you know, it's a new president, so it's a new broom, and it sweeps weirdly. And we have to, you know, we have to spend a lot of time on his first moves as president to see what the next 4 years, assuming, looks like. And I understand the necessity for that. But the fact of the matter is, he's saying exactly the same kind of crap he was saying 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's going to be no real big change from him. Just now, the kind of stuff that he's going to have to say has the weight of law. Woe is us. Oh, woe. Oh, woe. And it's scary. It is absolutely frightening. But I also like to see what's going on in other places. And there was, and this morning, as I was going through the news, there was this clip from somebody else who kind of underscored precisely what I've been warning people about ever since, well, I mean, actually, for the whole course of the show, but specifically now that we have somebody who came to power on a wave of theocracy. And this is a clip from Nancy Pelosi on George Scarborough's show on MSNBC.
They reconnect with a middle America who feels like sometimes they're looked down upon because of their faith or their values.
Well, thank you for asking that question, because the cultural issue, and especially when it comes to rural America, the isolation that some people feel there, plus they don't think that Democrats are people of faith, when the fact is that we are. And I say, this will be a little not in keeping with the spirit of the day of unity, but I say they pray in church on Sunday and then pray on people the rest of the week. Mm-hmm. And while we're doing the Lord's work by ministering to the needs of God's creation, they are ignoring those needs, which is to dishonor the God who made them. So we have to, we don't wear a religion on our sleeve, and maybe we should. We don't wrap ourselves in the flag, but maybe we should, because we're all, Democrats, Republicans, everyone right. loves our country, are people of faith. But we don't, as I say, exploit that because right. we don't think you're supposed to. But maybe we have to make it clearer.
Yeah, make it more clear.
And in our messaging now, we have Sherry Bustos from Illinois, in the rural areas of Illinois, reflecting because if you're a veteran and you're out there, if you're a person of faith and you're out there, and you're in rural America especially. Now, it's not confined right. to rural America, but that is a place where we know we have to communicate in a better way about our values.
Right.
That is the sound of you and I being thrown under the bus in order to keep power. There's just nothing more to that. And I have always said that do not think the Democrats are on our side. And when I say ours, I mean, you know, humanists, atheists, people who believe in the wall of separation of church and state. They will take any opportunity to throw people like us away and to make us into enemies whenever it suits their political purposes. I think Nancy Pelosi gets a raw deal by the press and by people. I think sometimes a lot of stuff gets laid at her feet that really shouldn't be there, that maybe should be elsewhere. This is not one of those times. And she does go off the rails. And this is one of those times. This is, she's realizing her party has failed. They do not have the House. They do not have the Senate. They do not have the White House. They do not have a majority of governorships. They do not have a majority of state houses. The Democrats that Nancy Pelosi is a part of is over. That party is one with history. A new party must happen. They must reset themselves. They must figure out a new way to do things. And this is Nancy Pelosi reaching out, looking for that new way, and basically saying, what did the bad guys do? Let's do that. Let's be more Christian. Let's tell rural people, now we don't care about your, you know, we don't care about your economic problems or anything like that, but we'll certainly moon about God with you.
The back end of her drop there sounded like, these yokels don't feel good about us. Let's rub them on their heads and tell them it'll be all right. I have always had issue with Nancy Pelosi. I can't even pin down why. It just doesn't seem to me that she's ever had the kind of vigorous opposition I would like in a Democrat.
Well, she's not the vigorous opposition. I mean, she is also pro-business. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at her background. Look where she comes from. She's very good for the people that she represents, but she's not representing the kind of people that we're talking about here, as far as I'm concerned.
She wants to pander to the religious right mm-hmm. and try and bring them over to our side, much like the strategy that Schumer tried outlining prior to the election, where you throw some people under the bus, that way you could bring the other side over more.
Right. And the fact of the matter is they feel that they must do this because they're concerned with power. And this is not the kind of thing I normally talk about, but this is just a grab for control. It really is. It's obvious and a little unintelligent in its approach. I kind of missed that in the whole, wow, okay, apparently I'm the jackass now. But you're right. This was complete pandering, and the people that she's hoping to reach with this are going to see through it immediately.
Mm-hmm. When you lose this great of an election, it's something that should have absolutely been in the bag, and you lose this bet, it's time to clean house. It's time to actually pivot away from the losing strategies,
right?
And instead of doubling down,
well, you know what, the Democrats could put a copy of the Ten Commandments in every courtroom in America and every government-owned space. You're still not going to convert people whose main issue is abortion. No matter how religious you pretend to be, which is what she's kind of talking about here,
you're just handing the Republicans their own victory.
Right? They're
just
never
giving it to them.
You're never gonna convert the people who have spent their entire lives hating you, not on logical principles, but on principles of on principles of religion by people in the pulpit saying that any Democrat is infected with Satan, which is why I haven't been saying, you know, I've been, people are going to go, well, aren't you just being weird because you've been saying we have to break bread with racists? Mm-hmm. And no, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that Trump won a lot of people that he shouldn't have because that they feel that the Democratic Party has not been actively addressing their issues.
And Pelosi's response is going to lose if this is carried out. I don't give a lot of support to the Democratic Party, but if their response is to become the thing I am most terrified of, I'm right. walking away from it wholesale, because the reason I am a liberal and a progressive and a humanist is because I like to have what I feel is the moral high ground where I don't have to deceive other people to bring them around to my way of thinking.
Right.
Which is what she's talking about. I mean, she's probably regretted that as soon as she walked out of that interview.
I don't know.
I don't think she did. But some of it sounded super prepared, like just the little catchphrase she had about they pray in church on Sunday, then they pray on the public the rest of the week. Like, well, that'd make an amazing bumper sticker, you know?
Right. But it's just positioning, it's optics, it's sound clips. That's the part she wants people to hear, ignoring everything around it that says, yeah, this is an obvious grab for power because we clearly lost.
Mm-hmm.
But to go back to what I was saying before, it's we need to talk to these people, not so that we can cater to their, not so that we can cater to the people who've spent their whole lives in church thinking that every Democrat is a tool of Satan. It's that there's a group of people who voted for Trump and keep voting for people against their own desires and against their own successes,
their own self-interests.
And so we need to find out the economic reasons why they keep doing this. We need to find a center where we can both agree, or a center where we can both say these are actually the problems, rather than just putting on the Technicolor dream coat and pretending that this is all we're both on the same side now. Pet. This is ridiculous. And this is the part that scares me more than Trump a little bit, because if they see the way Trump works is the way to success, then there's not going to be political space for anybody other than a very small segment of the population. All of the problems that we're worried about with Donald Trump being in power, you know, will we continue to have marriage equality? Will we have, you know, transgender equality? Will we have food? Will we have healthcare? All of these things become a lot more difficult to do when everybody in power on both supposed sides of the aisle think that the best way to do this is to cater to the people that think that you're not even human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this entire election process has set a dangerous precedence that's going to, it's going to reverberate for the next several decades.
I think it reestablishes a dangerous precedent. I mean, we have been down this lane before.
We've become a continent-wide episode of the Jerry Springer Show. And what worries me is that after Trump, who's next?
Yeah.
Who's after that? Howard Stern? He's actually a pretty rational guy. Like, who are you going to put?
Yeah. I'd feel weird about it, but
a
okay.
A coked up Hulk Hogan? Who's going to run for president after this?
Kanye West is already.
Oh, really?
He's already kind of seething at the mouth of the prospect.
All right. Well, there are some, you know.
Oh, you want to talk about, you know, a lot of good artists at your inauguration. If Kanye West is president, that's a concert I would go to.
Yes.
Only if he's producing.
Yeah. Well, do you think he wouldn't produce his own inauguration ball? Come on, man.
No, I just don't want to hear any of his content, his actual original content. He's a great producer, but his music's not so great.
Hey, he bears a lot of resemblance to
Trump. I will get
Trump
a lot of hate for that.
If you listen to him, he bears a lot. He constantly refers to himself as a genius and stuff like that. They're duking it out for world's greatest narcissist.
An estimated 3 million people rallied worldwide on Saturday after the presidential inauguration in protest of Trump and scads of Republican policies. The Women's March on Washington, D.C. reportedly attracted more than 500,000 protesters, with cities like Chicago, Seattle, Denver, Boston, and Minneapolis seeing crowds over 100,000. Los Angeles appeared to have been the largest, with an estimated 750,000 individuals surging into the streets. An effort to tally numbers worldwide is ongoing and managed by professors Jeremy Pressman from the University of Connecticut and Erica Chenoweth from the University of Denver. Statistically, it appears that about 1% of the U.S. population participated in the rally, surpassing mass protests, including the anti-Vietnam protest of 1969 and the anti-nuclear protest of 1982, making it the largest demonstration in modern American history.
Maybe Trump and his press secretary just had the crowds of people confused when they made all their claims about the numbers.
Yeah, well, when you live your life like that, if you see a crowd, you assume it's for you. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
so,
it's for him. There's a reason he's in a bulletproof limo driving by it.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
They're ready for him.
No, yeah. These are just people that just got the wrong date. They literally went to the wrong date.
Oh, there's a comedy in there somewhere. There's a movie. Oh, man. I sometimes wonder at the efficacy of protests, but when you have the largest protest in American history, no, that's got some teeth on it. That's got some power.
Quite often, politicians will not admit to being swayed by this sort of thing, but even Nixon in his memoirs said a big reason he pulled us out of Vietnam was because of the pressure on the streets with people protesting and things like that.
Yeah.
Even though he denied it the entire time and he was in office. And Trump's response to this yesterday was basically to plug his ears and go, nah, 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 it's not happening, and refuse to acknowledge it in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Which means that he knows it's going on.
Well, yeah. I mean, he does seem to have a really good ability to edit his own memories, so who knows. But that Nixon thing really bothers me, because you've got on one side this, I am a man who makes the proper decisions, and this whole sort of Cincinnatus trip where, you know, I'm a good dictator. But then wouldn't have been better if he just said, yeah, I hear the voice of the American people and I'm going to do something about it. I do not understand this tendency in American presidents to pretend like they aren't swayed by the people who vote for them.
They don't want to give more power to the sway, though. They actually want to control.
I think that's a big part of it, is they give them an inch, they're going to take a mile. Then the public will have their hand on policy. We can't have that.
But it gets, you know, I mean, I love the power behind that protest, with all the knitting hats and the fact that they're running out of yarn in huge international markets.
Huge.
Oh, God.
Bigly.
Because just so many people need them for the protest. I think this is where the hope comes in. This is why I don't think the world is ending.
Well, this is what turned me around.
No kidding.
On my news fast. Yeah, I was at my parents'. So the night that the election happened, I was at a comedy show in Olympia, Washington.
Right.
Slated to go up. There's a bunch of sets going on and three TVs happening during the returns. Right about the time everything it's getting real serious that this might happen, which is unthinkable, especially in Olympia, Washington. It's the most liberal part of one of the most liberal states in the country.
Yeah.
And so we're having to do comedy while the apocalypse is quite possibly taking shape on six televisions in this bar, and everyone at the comedy show is so horrified by it, they keep checking their phones to see if it's different on their phone than it is the three news stations. It was a horrible night for me, and the next day was just, it really shook my faith in the American people.
Yeah.
Because I do not understand how anyone can look at Donald Trump and see anything but a huckster.
Yeah.
And it terrifies me. And I'm not a fan of Hillary Clinton in any way, shape, or form. So I had to go on this news fast, which I kind of broke yesterday. I've been easing myself back into it as I have to be aware of who the president is.
Right.
And I heard that clip that we talked about earlier where he's dogging on schools and not making a lot of sense and just being a jerk. And I was like, it's just going to be more of the same. It's going to be this long, never-ending. He's like a shock jock that I don't want to listen to, but he's wormed his way onto every website and every media source all over the country. Oh, man, I don't know. How am I going to deal with this? And I wake up the next day, women all over the world are not having it. Nuh-uh. I was like, oh, yeah, that's where. Sadly, I didn't get to go to any of these things because I didn't know they were going on.
Okay.
Because I was on my news fast.
But right.
Yeah, that gives me a lot of hope.
Yeah, Becky woke me up with it.
That he may be the most despised person on the planet right now gives me hope.
Yeah.
God yeah. bless America.
Even that guy leaves, he's leaving George W. in the dust, that's for sure.
Oh, W.
Like, in his poncho.
I continue to feel bad for him. I was like, oh, you're such a doof. Yeah, it's too bad you killed a few million people.
And the difference between Bush and Trump is I have a lot of ideological problems with Bush, but I think we could kick back a couple of beers and get along for an hour if we had to.
Right.
Not with Donald Trump. That would never happen. Everything about him I find repellent.
Yeah, so I'm having brandy. Here's a cup of spiders. Poor people drink spiders, right?
Yeah.
Okay, here you are. Spiders.
How can you seriously take somebody... how can you take somebody serious that eats pizza with a fork and a knife?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, is that him?
That's him.
Okay, it was also Romney. I don't care.
Okay.
I don't care.
You seem to know a lot about it. Yeah. I didn't know Romney does that too.
Well, no, because I'm like in some weird constant pizza war because I'm from Chicago. And I'd like that one day.
New York pizza is superior.
Pizza you have to block.
I don't have
food.
6 more hours, guys.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. Hundreds of queer protesters march and dance their way from a Chevy Chase, Maryland metro station to Mike Pence's neighborhood, where they held a queer dance party demonstration on the Wednesday prior to Pence's swearing in as the current vice president. Organizers from Work for Pence and Disrupt J20 encouraged fellow protesters to get ready to work it and tell Daddy Pence, homophobia and transphobia are not tolerated in our country. Pence is known for signing a religious freedom law as Indiana governor that sanctions discrimination against LGBTQ individuals and places of public accommodation. Yeah, like I said, this is why I don't think we're all going to die in a horrible nuclear firestorm. It's like, isn't enough people going, no thanks, this is not good. And that seemed to work last time. Might work this time.
Yeah.
Who knows? Anything?
I'm still stuck on the idea of someone eating pizza with a fork and a knife.
I was hoping to get away from that.
Oh, I mean, if you got to put a show on for somebody, you might as well do it for the 46th president of the United States.
46th, is he? 46th president?
Yes, after the impeachment.
Oh, I get it. Okay. Because I did hear about people talking about how he's not actually the 45th. Vice president, he's like the 49th or something like that.
The vice president and the president's numbers aren't matched up.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But, and then you said 46th president. I'm like, oh, you mean that whole... No, you don't. I see what you're doing. Okay.
Pence is so ideologically mainstream that if he'd have been the president guy on the ticket, he might have lost.
Yeah. Well, we did... Before he actually won, we didn't spend a whole lot of time talking about Trump on the show because what do you say? He doesn't really stand for anything. He doesn't mean anything. And this isn't the show to talk about the comedy that the GOP presidential election has, or presidential
stuff.
He's
a living paradox. He's what I consider Kardashian famous.
Yeah.
Which is he's only famous because he's famous. And there's no way to combat that because as soon as you mention that is the case, you're adding to the storm.
Right.
So he's a perpetual motion machine of fame. There's nothing we can do. Hook him up to a car and you get... best mileage of your life.
So we haven't talked about him very much, about Pence very much, or sorry, about Trump very much, but Pence we talked about all the time because of the law he passed in Indiana. It's like Pence is a known quantity to us. When Pence passed some abortion law, she was worried that she was sad that she didn't keep her wisdom teeth, so she'd give them a proper burial. Because he passed one of those.
Oh, where you have to bury your abortion?
Yeah, because apparently that was one
of
the things that
he did. How specific was that law? It's always been like, does the hospital give you a plastic bag and a shovel? Or do you have to cry? Are there a state mandated a number of tears? You have to name it.
What precisely are you going for?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't force someone to have a funeral. There's people I know in real life that when they die, I'm not going to their funeral.
Right. Yeah, I'm not big on funerals. I don't really know that I'm going to have one. So having to give one to my,
I find it would be kind of a bummer. Honestly.
Hair when I cut it. That was the thing, is Pence is a known quantity for us and, well, frankly, for the GOP, which is probably why they picked him.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, everybody's like, Trump's going to realize that being the president is hard and rage quit the presidency. But then that leaves us with Pence. And Pence is, I mean, for policies of personal freedom, it's kind of worse.
Honestly, though, I don't even think it's going to take for Trump to rage quit. Pence is already pretty much the most powerful vice president ever. He's already going to have more power than even Dick Cheney himself.
No, but no, Dick Cheney is a scary robot from the future. actually, Dick Cheney just might be an older Mike Pence, given a robot body and sent back to the turn of the century. I don't know. I guess we'll have to see on that one. This is Ask an Atheist, 844 Skeptic, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to break when we come back. If you have an email and some more Ask an Atheist style good news, I mean actually good news, not haha, it's actually bad news, but I'm calling it good news.
Has Ngadwe Trust invaded your town? Are you tired of government officials who want to plaster Ngadwe Trust on taxpayer-owned property? Are you afraid because your local sheriff placed an Ngadwe Trust decal on the patrol cars? We are here to help. The original motto project is for those who feel the separation of church and state is an important issue and should be honored regardless of your belief or lack thereof. Theists, non-theists, and all free thinkers are welcome. We need your support to show politicians that diversity exists within our nation, and their promotion of a monotheistic religion and push for theocracy will not be tolerated. Stand up and be heard. Join us at originalmotto.us.
Allegedly, soccer is a beautiful game.
It is when you know what's going on.
That's the problem. MLS is 20 years old, and people are still shocked to hear that there's an American Soccer League.
That's why you and I are talking about it. This is a discussion of American soccer for nerds and beginners. It's a good first step if a crippling soccer addiction is something that's missing from your life.
Join the club. Celebrate the 20th anniversary of MLS by actually following the season.
Hands-free football. New episodes every week at handsfreefootball.com. Bring it back, but it's more
than basic. If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
So, in the break, this is Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey, by the way. You mentioned that there is some good news that James Cameron is taking back the Terminator franchise?
Yes, actually, this is going to be phenomenal. I mean, after the train wreck of Genesis and Salvation, we actually might actually get a good Terminator movie, finally, the first since 1991.
Okay, I guess now's the time.
Tim Miller seems to be on board for directing it, so we might be have a Deadpool kind of vibe to it.
After Genesis, the Terminator franchise was an infinity knot,
like, right?
In terms of time travel paradoxes. Are we just throwing all that out the window, like we should, and go back to Terminator 3?
It's actually going to be a complete reboot, it seems.
Oh, really?
Right.
Oh, nice.
I don't know. I tend to think Terminator is the 21st century Highlander series, you know, the
flying skateboard Highlanders,
the whole thing. The franchise has hit an iceberg and is sinking. Mm. And the best thing to do is to get the heck away from it, because at this point, any ridiculous thing that you can say that the Highlander franchise has, where, you know, they go into the future and into space, and oh, by the way, they're not actually the things that they say they are, and oh, by the way, the whole thing is so that they can be human. Terminator's done. Pretty much all of it. Let it go.
It hasn't gotten into space yet. Jason got into space.
Yeah.
They're rebooting that as well with now an explanation of why he exists.
No.
Friday the 13th. They can't do that.
Oh, that's lame.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I guess we're talking about movies. I would like
Midichlorians.
I would like to thank Peggy from Kent, Washington, Paul from Ashford, Washington, Nick and Clint from the internet, and Erica from Seattle for meeting Peggy's challenge. Peggy's challenge is the listeners to Ask an Atheist by Peggy from Kent to help us keep the lights on. Every dollar you give us goes directly towards show production. You can go to our website, askanatheist.tv. It's right there. Also, I've got a Patreon. I just posted some cool stuff that I'm working on to my Patreon group this day, actually a couple days ago. And if you'd like to see what I'm up to and help me keep doing all the cool projects that I'm going on, you can go to our website. And I think just above Peggy's challenge button is a link to my Patreon. Thank you very much. So we have one more news story. A volunteer pan-pagan non-Abrahamic ministry has been permitted to hold services at 2 Ohio prisons. The Appalachian Pagan Ministry, based in Huntington, West Virginia, is led by an ordained Druid priestess and a universal life pastor. Believers of Asatru, Odinism, Heathenism, Wicca, and Satanism have all participated in the meetings. The ministry expects to expand to 3 more prisons in Ohio and West Virginia correction systems, in which inmates must request visits by outside religious organizations rather than groups deciding to visit and hold services on their own.
Whatever.
I wonder what kind of Satanists we're talking about here. I do have to
wonder.
Do
they get better food for claiming Satanist? Because
probably not, given where they are.
Yeah. If you say you're Muslim on your way into prison, you're supposed to get better treatment out of the lunch line. So
who says that?
Huh? The documentary on HBO that I watched a while ago.
Oh, okay.
There's like a lot of fake Muslims in the prison system because they get better food because it's religious needs. Yeah.
I imagine if you claim you're Jewish, you get the same thing. The rules are a lot.
Invent a religion where it's against my religion to be in prison. That's what I would do.
This is a good thing. It is. It's nice to see things about religious plurality in places where you might not expect them, like Southern Ohio and stuff like that. But, okay, do we need to have like a big war about who gets to claim the word heathen? Because I know there's a couple of groups here in Washington that are atheist groups that call themselves heathens. And I know that there's a lot of New Age groups that call themselves heathens. So it's like, who owns it? We shall fight.
Whatevs.
Yeah, okay.
Everyone can use it.
Everybody should be able to use it. Isn't that the point?
Like infidel, you know, it works.
It was generally used against anybody that wasn't Christian. So.
Right. Mm-hmm. I do wonder about the use of the word infidel by Christians. That's kind of funny because that's a word Christians use too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Christians and Muslims. And the Mormons co-opted Gentile from the Jews.
Yeah. Terminology's fun. Mm-hmm.
Language is an evolving thing.
So we have an email from Kofi from Seattle who writes, how can we make sure our atheist humanist charities and rescue efforts abroad don't end up being fronts for spying and surveillance?
Like charities that we started? Like our charities? Or the CIA setting up a Banana Republic charity?
Well, I think he means charities that are for atheists and humanists and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So theoretically, I mean charities that we start.
Do not buy AK-47s for guerrilla groups in South America with that money.
Okay.
That would be my suggestion.
Any idea on this one?
Well, I mean, basically, I mean, we don't have the protections for those charities where it's closed books. Everything is accounted for when it comes to any kind of charity that's not religious. So the best accountability that you have is the financial information. You can easily track down sources of income and where the money goes to.
Yeah. I know in my case, the situation when dealing with charitable organizations in the atheist and humanist communities has been they're walking a fine wire and they don't have the net below it that religious groups do because your religious groups, okay, you get a bit of a pass in this country. And if they screw up once
a little bit,
okay. And if they screw up once, they're basically going to be hated by everybody, not just by governmental institutions, but it'll take not but a second for the entire atheism community to say that they've been horrible human beings the entire time and you're just as bad as this, that, and the other thing. So I know a lot of people, you know, in these charitable organizations try to get to know the people they work with very closely and to get a very good understanding of what they're about so that they don't trip up and make the mistakes that a lot of religious organizations have done.
Well, I'm wondering now if this question isn't asking maybe if there are secular charities out there, how do we not let the open book policy that we'd have to have with a charity be used against the people taking services from the secular charity?
Right.
There could be danger there.
Yeah, I would.
I don't know if I'm interpreting the question.
No,
right
that's
or not.
Whether or not that's a part of the question, I think that's an important part of it because in the purpose of a transparent process, and in the pursuit of trying to make sure that we don't make a misstep, we might put people who don't have the protections that we have in the places in which we go in certain kinds of danger. So just because the research is being done doesn't mean that we get to know every bite of data that's available. And sometimes we have to make it information based off of, like, we don't know who the aid is going to. Like, maybe maybe we do an aid thing and some of these people showing up for aid are part of Boko Haram or something like that. And that may be just a cost of doing charity in some respect, but I think it's easier to make certain that the organizations, because they're pre-established organizations we work with, don't make that mistake.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I am wondering if this is a callback to the previous Republican administration where they would use vaccination efforts and stuff like that as a way to gain intel on places in which they'd, you know, would like to know who's in charge and what's and blah, 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 terrorist organizations. which created a huge situation where people just don't trust charity anymore. People who need help aren't getting it because they're afraid they're going to be used for some sort of weird American intel process. And I think that's a thing we have to, and I think that's definitely something we may want to think about, because the party that thought that up in, you know, 8 or 10 years ago, or at least rethought it up, may do it again. And we have to be careful about that.
I believe that helped get bin Laden, actually.
Yeah. Did it?
Yeah. NGOs were very were actual instrumental.
Is that good?
No. The outcome, I don't know of anybody that's mad about the outcome.
Okay.
But what we sacrificed for that outcome can be devastating.
Well, you say NGOs and I say charitable organizations, and one is not equitable to the other. There are NGOs that are most definitely not charitable organizations and are more in line with... There are NGO intelligence organizations.
Well, true, but the thing is, an NGO is specifically any organization that's not supposed to be government. It's a non-governmental organization. Charities should fall under
right.
NGO status.
But we're talking Venn diagrams, and what I'm saying is my circle is a bit smaller than just NGO.
Okay.
And I'll be honest with you, that's not something I've looked very closely at, but it was something I did know, that vaccination efforts were used as intelligence fronts, and that's a mistake. And maybe that's what we're worried about. But I think the solution has to be the same, which is transparency and awareness of where we go and what we do. And don't just trust it because the government shows up and says that they want to help. You go, okay, with what? Doing what? Why? We'll give you umpteen million dollars and shut up. No thanks. I think it may come to that.
That would be great if charities could actually... I mean, charities have to operate on funds, so sometimes it'll be tough for them to turn that down.
Maybe
too.
It's better to not, and then my point there is maybe it's better to not operate. And I think that's what, that would be Kofi's concern as well, is if the cost of doing business is creating distrust between groups of people who want to help each other, maybe the better solution is to not help.
It's just not a good solution, though, unfortunately.
It's not the best. It's the most effective outcome, perhaps. But we can't make any of these decisions without a good idea who we're working with. And so I think that's part one. Is if an organization wants to work with you, figure something out about them. Where do they come from? Who do they work with? What is, you know, don't just say, hi, we want to work with you. We're a religious organization. We're a non-religious organization. Here's a whole bunch of money. Or we want to help you do this.
See, that's easy to say from where we're sitting. But when you're actually requiring assistance, you kind of can't be critical of where your assistance is coming from if you absolutely need that assistance.
You must be critical of where your assistance is coming from. Otherwise, it's not actually assistance. I'm absolutely serious. It's like, yeah, I'm a charity. I must do this, so I need to use whatever funds come in. But if it creates a situation that's patently dangerous or prevents future charitable actions from happening, then you're not doing your job and you should avoid it. And sometimes self-destructing is better than basically, because it's self-destruction on one level or another level. Either your charity ceases to exist and you have to find another job, or you're not going to be able to do your job because nobody trusts you anymore.
So this argument was played out actually last year in Missouri when you had an atheist wanting to raise funds for the homeless, and they rejected his money because it would negatively affect their contributions from other institutions. So
that's a different thing, though. That's like, I wasn't a big fan of that, but that's not, you're going to have to explain that a little bit more if it's the one I'm thinking of.
Well, basically, they rejected the funds because they thought that that would, because it was a Baptist-ran charity, they didn't, basically, the atheists weren't, since the atheists don't support their view, don't share the same views, and they saw this as a detractor from future contributions from other religious organizations if they took the atheists' money.
Okay. That's different than what I'm talking about, though. They weren't doing it, if they said, if we take this money, then people won't come to our shelter anymore. Because people won't trust us because they're feared that they'll harvest our organs or something like that. There may be a there. I guess we'll leave it there. This is Ask an Atheist. Our phone number is 844-753-7842. Our email is questions at askanatheist.tv. Our Twitter is askanatheistwa. More Ask an Atheist stuff next week, but this is kind of, I mean, it's Inauguration Day. We got to talk about it. See you then.